We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. Justin Spears here with Mike Lev and Alec White, and we are down at the McHale Media Center after Kevin Sumlin's weekly press conference. Arizona coming off a 28-point loss to the Oregon Ducks, 34-6.
Again, weren't you guys just here?
Yes, we were.
Yeah.
Not too long ago. And you know what's crazy? We were looking back on the weekend in Arizona athletics. U of A volleyball sweeps the Oregon schools on the road. Aaron McDonald scores a program record 44 points. Arizona beats a ranked Texas team. And not just beat them, I mean, they clobbered them. Men's basketball, Zeke Nagy, another impressive performance. Arizona handles New Mexico State. Arizona soccer getting an NCAA tournament first round win.
Football, where you at?
And then there's Arizona football, where I don't know how to assess these guys. But we, as expected, you know, Arizona, they were 27.5 point underdogs, and well, Oregon covered. They won by 28 points. Guys, when you look back at this game though on Saturday night, what jumped out to you the most?
A couple things. I would say that I was actually kind of encouraged by what I saw from the defense. After that, obviously, that second play of the game was a major issue. You know, the communication breakdowns were a huge focus for them after the Oregon State game. And then they had one on the second play of the game where two guys covered the same receiver and another one goes streaking down the sideline. But after that, I mean, it was only a handful of big plays. They kind of kept the Wildcats in the game. I thought they played with really good energy. They were active. They were playing hard the whole game, which is really something that I was focusing on in this game, because I have seen games over the last few years up in the Pacific Northwest in November when it's cold and there's really nothing to play for, where Arizona's kind of checked out, you know, and I didn't get that sense in this game, which is, I think, a good sign. The other thing that jumped out to me was the offensive line issues. And that's going to be a huge problem in this week's game against Utah, which has probably the best defensive line in the entire conference. Kevin Sumlin said that the three injured veterans who did not play against Oregon, Josh McCauley, Cody Kreese, and Bryson Kane, are all doubtful for this upcoming game. So, you know, they're scrambling up front. And, you know, it all starts up there. Every single offense that's ever been created, it all starts with the offensive line. If Arizona can't, you know, run the ball or protect the quarterback on a consistent basis, they're going to have a hard time scoring. And the only defense in the league that's better than Oregon's is the one that they're about to face on senior night at Arizona Stadium.
It's funny that we're sitting here and talking about a 28-point loss and saying that we're semi-encouraged by the way Arizona played. And, you know, we have to be a little bit. You know, they held them to 34 points.
They held them to 34 points.
Yeah, could have been a lot worse.
Yeah.
Oregon tried to, you know, Oregon's play calling was a little rough. I think they tried to be a little too fancy when you really don't need to be fancy to beat Arizona's secondary, as we saw on the second play of the game. But for Arizona's side, I was pretty concerned about the self-inflicted errors that they had. They had 8 penalties, only added up to 45 yards, but there were a couple false starts. You had
six of the 8 were offensive penalties, and they were all of the sort of procedural variety. There was no holding. There was no pass interference. There was no face masks. It was all like false starts, illegal shift. You know, all of those kind of things.
Yeah. So not terrible penalties, but ones that still, as if they're offensive, 6 out of the 8 are offense, when you're trying to score points, going back 5 yards on, you know, second and seven, third and 10 sets you back, you know, second and long, third and long. It's a hard hole to dig yourself out of when you're an Arizona offense that really struggles to move the ball.
Yeah, I couldn't get this into my five takeaways because I ran out of room and time to do so. But I calculated the average that they needed to gain on their 16 third downs, and it was 7.8 yards. Obviously, it's a lot. Seven of them, they needed 10 or more yards, so almost half. And they had converted only 5 of 16. And you're not surprised when you hear those numbers. It's been pretty much a direct correlation all year long. The average amount of yards needed to gain the first down correlates with the percentage that you convert. Mm-hmm. And when it's third and short, it's way easier to convert than third and long. And those penalties and those offensive line breakdowns led to a lot of those third and long situations. That is not a place you want to be if you're Arizona. It's especially not a place you want to be if you're Arizona facing Oregon and Utah in back-to-back weeks.
And the other penalty, you said 6 out of 8 were on offense. Another one on the defensive side of the ball was 12 men on the field, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which... caused a, I don't even know how to describe it, a commotion on the sideline. I mean, that was probably the most angry I've seen Kevin Sumlin on the sideline. And I know, you know, we're usually at games, so we can't normally see him on the sideline. But, I mean, from the games that I've seen on TV this season with them being on the road, I just don't remember seeing Kevin Sumlin quite like that. And it was at a variety of people. It was coaches and, you know, guys.
Yeah, he was just sort of screaming at the entire sideline. He was obviously frustrated because what preceded them having 12 men on the field was an injury timeout. So they had several minutes to figure out the personnel that they wanted to get out there. And he said today that they put in a new goal line package, so there's some different personnel than what they're used to. What's funny is that after that, he's yelling, get the blank off the field, get the blank off the field. Two guys came off the field. So then they played the next play with 10, and Trayvon Mason made an awesome play, knifing into the backfield to create a tackle for loss. You know, Kevin Sumlin said today that they're not going to be, you know, using that 10-man look in the future.
You offered that suggestion.
I know. He thought it was a good idea, but he politely declined. But for the most part, I mean, take that play out of the mix and that first play of the game, which they obviously all count. But I didn't see those communication breakdowns that I had seen previously, which I thought was a good sign. I also thought, like, the safeties played maybe their best game collectively of the season.
Scotty Young did.
Scotty Young for mm-hmm. sure. Tristan Cooper also had some really nice tackles. He had the deflection that led to the interception. You know, so obviously Chuck Cecil's influence is being felt there. I don't know whether it's going to win him a job at the end of the day. I have no idea. But like I said, at least some encouraging signs from that side of the ball. And the story of this Arizona season, I feel like, though, is that it just depends on the week. Like, you know, what hole are you trying to plug? You know, for several weeks it was the defense. Now it's flipping back to the offense, which was kind of what the issue was against Washington and USC. So, you know, I think the lead of my story Saturday night was, if it isn't one thing, it's another. And I feel like that just sort of encapsulates everything that's been going on.
I mean, but even though the defense showed some improvement in that game against Oregon, or they showed some fight. They didn't, like you said, they didn't look checked out. I mean, this is a game where they were 27.5-point underdogs. Nobody thought Arizona was going to win that football game except for them. And I thought the defense definitely showed that in the first half and in parts of the second half. But one thing that really jumped out to me in that game was freshman cornerback Christian Roland Wallace. Somebody asked Kevin Sumlin today, like, what's going on with the communication on that side of the ball? Like, what's not registering? And Kevin Sumlin said it's all about practicing. It's all about getting better. But the thing is he had a mental breakdown or a coverage breakdown where in that first half against Oregon State. Wasn't it the very first drive of the game mm-hmm. against the Beavers?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oregon State storms down the field and caps off a touchdown because Christian Roland Wallace didn't know what coverage he was in, man or zone. And then second play of the game, 32 seconds into the game against Oregon, Christian Roland Wallace, another busted coverage. I've been so disappointed by him because we saw when he first arrived at campus and said, whoa, he's got the body to play cornerback in the Pac-12. And he had a decent start, and then all of a sudden he just really dropped off.
I don't know on the first play who was the one who messed up. Him or Jace. I'm not sure. Obviously, one of them was supposed to run down the sideline. Here's what I'll say about CRW. He has all the tools. From everything that I've heard, he's studious and he's got high character and he asks a lot of questions and he's going to work really hard to get better. So hopefully what happens is, like, all of this stuff just sort of forms calluses on him and he becomes, you know, literally like thick-skinned.
Yeah.
And doesn't let it bother him and learns from his mistakes and just becomes better for it. You know, what you don't want to happen is that it just kills his confidence and he's sort of questioning himself. So I kind of like the fact that they're still throwing him out there. He's still making plays later in the game. Like, he had nearly had an interception in the end zone on that ball that Herbert forced in there. He had a really nice pass breakup on a fade route down the left sideline. Like, he's going to be one of the building blocks of this defense, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, the way, you know, Kevin Sumlin described it today was, like, the only way you can really learn at the moment of truth for a cornerback is to play in games. Mm-hmm. So they're throwing him into the deep end and hoping that he, you know, doesn't drown.
And if there's anybody that can really show him the way, this guy we just mentioned, Jace Whitaker. Because I remember when Jace Whitaker, I'm not sure if you were around for this, Lev.
I was not.
When he was a freshman, they just threw Jace Whitaker in there. And you could tell he was a freshman because I forgot what team they were playing against. It was either Utah or Colorado, but they were just attacking him. He, on his side of the field, every single player they were throwing at him. And Kevin Sumlin said that today. You know, when you look at the depth chart and you look at the roster and you see the two letters, FR, you're like, oh, okay, let's see what this 18, 19-year-old is about. Let's welcome him to big boy football. So, I mean, Christian Rolla-Wallace, I've been disappointed by his play over the last few weeks, but, I mean, Jace Whitaker was in a similar spot, and he's been Arizona's leader entering this season, and he's been a pretty solid cornerback. So,
what do you guys think of the quarterback play in the game against Oregon and what it should look like here against Utah or for the rest of the season?
Well, someone said last week at the press conference that it was going to be the starting quarterback was going to be determined by who plays best in practice, and we found out Saturday when we get to the Oregon game that Grant Gunnell is going to start. And then after three series, they took him out and Tate was in for the rest of the game.
Well, until the last two series
when it was, you know, pretty much over. And I believe you tweeted the Sumlin quote after the game as to why he made that switch, and he talked about the offensive line and Oregon being able to get a lot of pressure. And my thinking is, wouldn't you know that going in, that you're not going to have your full complement of an offensive line and that Oregon was going to be able to get that pressure? Or am I reading too much into it?
I mean, I guess so, but you never really know until you see them out there on the field performing. And things kind of got worse after Jordan Morgan got hurt. I watched kind of the Zapruder film over and over, the last field goal of the first half to see what happened to Jordan Morgan. And he did kind of lunge forward and didn't really, there was no one to block. So I wonder if he maybe tweaked his back or something. We don't know what the injury situation is, but he didn't play in the second half, which forced even more shuffling of the line. I guess my question is, who would you rather have if you know your offensive line is struggling? Would you rather have Khalil, who holds onto the ball too long but maybe could break off a run, or do you want Grant Gunnell, who is going to get rid of the ball quicker?
And that's why I said, answering your questions, you know your offensive line is going to struggle this week, so are you going to make your quarterback decision based on that? If Grant was the better quarterback in practice, and he's a quarterback that's known and has shown to get the ball out of his hands right away, I mean, pass rush shouldn't be an issue if he's getting the ball, you know, less than 2 seconds after the snap. So,
but of the six sacks, five of them were on Gunnell.
True.
And he was holding the ball a lot. And it looked to me, I mean, you can't see this on TV, but it looked to me like guys weren't getting separation, which isn't surprising because Oregon's got, you know, several pro prospects in their secondary. And, you know, I think he would have thrown the ball in those situations if he did see that someone was open or coming open. My question for you guys is, what do you do now? You got senior night against Utah. Do you start Khalil Tate as sort of a gesture of thanks and gratitude for your good work? And, hey, it's your last home game. You get to go out there first. And do you keep him in there for the whole game? Do you continue to rotate? How do you play it? What do you think?
I think it'll go back to what we saw against Oregon State and Stanford when they did the Khalil Tate will start.
I agree, yeah.
And then Grinnell will get the third or fourth series, and then we'll have this cycle where they play in and out. Because I think Tate's going to play a fair share in his senior night, but I think he'll get the start too. But I still have the feeling that they want Grinnell to be out there in some capacity.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of high hopes for the offense in general in this matchup when you're missing as many as three starting or three of your top, let's say, six or seven offensive linemen going against the best defensive line in the conference. I mean, whether it's Grinnell or Tate, they're both going to be running for their lives, and they're really going to have to kind of, I think, scheme things in a way where they're getting the ball out fast. I mean, I hate to say it, but we might need to see, like, the return of Bubble Screen U.
I was about to say.
Saturday night, you know, and kind of really play it safe that way. And maybe you just have to kind of junk the idea of having a downfield passing attack because it just might not be feasible.
Whatever happened to the running backs? I mean, J.J. Taylor, I thought, had a pretty solid game.
Yeah.
And he's been having a solid season for Arizona. He moved into – it was fifth all-time on the rushing list.
Past Mike Bell.
Great running back, by the way, Mike Bell. But what happened to those guys? It seems to me that they've been pretty ineffective in the passing game. Because remember, at the start of the season, it was – oh, man, this true freshman, Michael Wiley out of Texas. Noel Mazzoni said he's got some wiggle, and he's probably one of the most versatile. He reminds him of J.J. Taylor. What happened to Wiley? What happened to Gary Brightwell? What happened to all of these running backs?
Well, I guess a couple things. One, J.J.'s healthy, and he's clearly the best of the bunch, and they want to feed him as much as possible. So that has diminished the playing time of some of the other guys. I guess my question, though, is why haven't we seen the two-back set more? Which is something that they were utilizing earlier in the year, and it's a way to get us, you know, a second really good player out there, maybe more short passes, maybe create a little bit more uncertainty in the defense as to who's going to get the ball. I would like to see a little bit more of that personally because I thought it was a pretty effective package when they used it earlier in the year.
Well, what happened to Gary Brightwell? Greg McElroy on the broadcast was saying how great Gary Brightwell was and how he's a future pro prospect. Where is it?
Go ahead, Love.
He got four touches. He got four carries for 20 yards. Look, this was a game where they were not able to sustain offense. They had, what, less than 70 plays? And if they had 90 plays, I'm sure he would have gotten more. So,
I don't know. I just think with the situation that they're in right now, they need to be able to try everything because obviously it's not working. Like I know you said, if it's not one thing, it's the other. You know, recently it was the defense, and this past week it was mostly the offense not being able to move the ball. But you're sitting at four wins right now. You have to win this game on Saturday, and you have to beat ASU just to become bowl eligible. Does Arizona get desperate, and do they whip out all the tricks? Do they start throwing to the running backs again? Do we start to see the two quarterback set with both of them on the field? I pitched that last week and we did not see it. I think
Khalil Tate line up as like a wide receiver.
I don't know.
Send him out in motion. Have, like Lev said, have J.J. Taylor, have Grant Goodell the quarterback, have Khalil Tate, J.J. Taylor right beside him, and just get creative. I mean, what do you have to lose right now?
I think they might save that stuff for the final game of the season if they're going to have sort of the kitchen sink approach to things. I just don't think they have the horses against Utah. And I would kind of go the other way and try to make it into a low-scoring, play-it-safe kind of game.
Game.
Hope that your defense... I know.
That's Utah's game.
I just don't see enough... like I said, that matchup is... that's rough. that your offensive line against that defensive front, when you're missing definitely... I would say what? Two best guys? Would you say Creason and McCauley are their two best offensive linemen? Donovan Lai, maybe number three in there? So, I don't know. Normally I've sort of can maybe talk myself into some sort of a path to victory. And the only thing I can come up with for this Utah game, which obviously we'll talk about more later in the week, is weird stuff happens when Utah faces Arizona in Tucson late in the year.
That's right. They had a couple upsets.
Which is not any sort of – that's not a tangible thing that you can grasp. It's just sort of a
an idea. Oregon too, that Arizona's kind of had success knocking them off when they're top 10.
I feel better about it here. I mean, obviously you're not going to have the false start problems and stuff when you're at home. But I think Utah's better than Oregon.
Noise.
I mean, I had them ranked higher. I ranked Utah higher than anyone in the country this week. I bumped them up to fourth.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
In the college football playoffs.
I know they haven't played anyone really. Their schedule's been pretty soft. And their loss isn't as good as Oregon's loss. I mean, they lost to USC. Oregon lost to Auburn. Their best out-of-conference game is probably BYU. But they've just been killing everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, they are just blowing everyone out of the stadium.
So.
Which is what you thought was going to happen in that UCLA game, which may be a good transition to the Pac-12 Weekend Review.
Let's go to...
Segment brought to you by the Pac-12.
The Conference of Champions.
We're back.
All right, so we'll talk about that UCLA-Utah game in just a little bit. First off, let's start with Washington State-Stanford. Wazoo getting the win in typical Wazoo fashion, scoring 49 points. Stanford only 22.
I was right about that one.
Yeah.
Yay me. I think, if I'm not mistaken, they had a 500-yard passer and a 100-yard rusher.
Yep.
In this game, which is a good trick. And Davis Mills... The Stanford backup quarterback also passed for 500 yards. So you had 1,024 yards in passing in a Stanford football game.
That's great.
So which team of those two played its type of game, would you say?
Wazoo. Wazoo. Anthony Gordon, man.
They're a weird team to figure out, Washington State.
It's like that every year.
How could Stanford play a game where they have 50 pass attempts and 10 rushes? 10 rushes for 6 net yards. How is that possible?
With your backup quarterback. Because KJ Costello didn't play.
Davis Mills.
It was Davis Mills.
Yeah.
And you're not giving your guys the ball. Does Stanford not have any good running backs?
I mean, Cameron Scarlett looked pretty good against Arizona.
Totally
Arizona's luck that, like, the healthiest and best that KJ Costello has been all season was that Saturday afternoon.
Arizona.
At Stanford.
Can't catch a break.
When you were there.
my personal favorite game of the week, Oregon State, ASU, the Beavers getting the win 35-34. I called it. I said Oregon State would win this game, and they did. And it all came down to a 2-point conversion.
Yeah, they
two-point conversion.
A pitch to Eno Benjamin.
Where they, like, overloaded the left side in such an obvious way that you totally knew what was coming. And the play worked so poorly that, you know, Benjamin, like, ended up throwing the ball to the opposite side of the field because he had absolutely nowhere to go and he was desperate in that situation. But I don't blame Herm Edwards for going for two. I just think the play call was bad.
Yeah.
Especially when you have such a great young mobile quarterback who was taken out of the play. When you just run that weird, like, old school pitch. Like, run a play where you get your quarterback on the move, you know, or even just a straight drop back where if the defense breaks down, he could run into the end zone.
Daniels had thrown for almost 350 yards and 3 touchdowns in that
game. Sheesh.
True freshman on the road.
He's been great on the road, too.
So, Brandon Ayuk emerged as their best receiver this year, and I heard NFL Network and NFL.com draft expert Daniel Jeremiah on a podcast the other day, and he lumped Brandon Ayuk in with the very top receivers in the class.
Really?
For the NFL draft in 2020. So just something to store.
Right.
I think Brandon Ayuk is a stud.
Okay.
Another note about ASU, we could be looking at a scenario next week for the Territorial Cup where Arizona's coming in on a six-game losing streak, and ASU would be coming in on a 5-game losing streak because the Sun Devils play Oregon. Yeah,
yeah.
I think that game's going to be close, but we'll get to that later.
Oh man,
fun times.
So, and wasn't it a similar situation last year? Wasn't ASU sitting at 5 wins, right? And then they beat Arizona, became bowl eligible.
No, they were at 6.
No, they were at 6.
Arizona was looking to become bowl eligible.
Yeah.
That's what it was. All right, let's look ahead. Let's look at UCLA, Utah. Wow,
you were right about this one, Justin.
49-3. I knew it was going to be a smacking. UCLA on the road, Utah in Salt Lake City. It just was a recipe for a good old fashioned butt kicking. That's exactly what it was.
UCLA was moving the ball early in the game, but sort of like self destruction. You know, mistakes, turnovers. Utah had it's not a pick six, but when you return a fumble for a touchdown, what do we call that?
Scoop and score?
Scoop and score, sure. They had one of those by one of their many great defensive players. I got to say, like, I've thought for much of the season that Oregon's ceiling was maybe higher than Utah's, and I'm not sure that that's the case anymore because Tyler Huntley's just playing out of his mind.
14 completed passes for 335 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And two touchdowns, no picks.
They also have the best running back probably in the league in Zach Moss, who had 17 for 127 and two touchdowns.
Does Zach Moss become an All-American? Not a first-teamer, but
he might.
Do we look at him as like a second or a third team?
He might be in that discussion. If someone asked someone today, like, which is more dangerous, the or Utah running game or the deep passing game, and he said it's all dangerous.
Yeah.
And I might add that, like, offense isn't necessarily even the strength of the team, so.
So you're saying a tough bout ahead for the Wildcats Saturday at Arizona Stadium.
Yeah, I was very wrong, by the way, about the last game on the docket here.
USC Cal.
Yep.
Trojans winning 41-17. Lev, you thought it was going to be like a 20-17 game? You thought it would be very low scoring?
Got the 17 part right. Well, in my defense, Chase Garbers got hurt again early in the game and did not return, which was a problem. Devin Modster had one good game, and then he reverted back to his Devin Modster form, was 11 for 22 for 95 yards and two interceptions. How about that Keaton Slovis? 29 for 35 for 406 yards and four touchdowns. And that's freshman on the road against a pretty good Cal defense.
And that's the week after throwing for almost 250 in one quarter
mm-hmm.
against ASU. Kurt Warner, give that man props for nurturing such a great quarterback.
All right, so USC is 7-4. They've got their rival game coming up here against UCLA. If they win that game and Utah somehow stumbles in one of their last two, which is unlikely, but you never know, against Arizona and Colorado, USC would be your Pac-12 South champion.
Right, because USC beat Utah.
Can you fire the coach who wins the Pac-12? Well, let's say they win. Let's say that happens, and then let's say they beat Oregon in the Pac-12 championship game. Can you fire Clay Helton if he goes 9-4 in the regular season, wins the conference to earn a Rose Bowl berth?
Yeah, you can. You can. No, I mean, because I know Mike Bone, he's the new AD, and I'm sure he's already got a couple things in mind, because that's the first thing that he was probably asked about, or
of course.
That's something that's probably on his agenda is, we got to figure out this football situation, because the football is good at USC. Everything is good at USC. And just like every other Wildcast podcast, we tend to mix our sports metaphors. Shout out to Ryan Finley. But Dwayne Casey for the Toronto Raptors won NBA Coach of the Year. Or for the
Raptors
for the Eastern Conference, or no, he's won Coach of the Year just in general when he was with the Raptors. He was fired that same year, and he was actually fired before he won the award. So he was fired, hired by the Pistons, and then was given the award for coaching the Raptors
because they tweeted out, "Congrats, coach.
Yeah, congrats, coach." If you know somebody is better and somebody that can take your program to the next level, then, yeah, you go out and you make that hire. Because Mike Bone – Clay Helton's not Mike Bone's guy. And it's unfortunate because I like Clay Helton.
I do too.
I think he's a good dude. But if Mike Bone wants to roll the dice and he knows that there's a big name out there, a guy that's probably working as a Fox Sports analyst right now, I think you make that move.
The problem is he's so unpopular among the fan base right now.
That Clay Helton?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just can't bring him back.
And here's my thing, though. We know USC's ceiling because we've seen it.
Yeah. It's the highest of anybody in the league.
Out of anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, they could be a national powerhouse year in and year out. We saw that under Pete Carroll. Can Clay Helton get that back? I don't know. I think he's already reached the ceiling. He's gone to a Rose Bowl and he's won it. I'm not sure Clay Helton's going to do anything after that because they're not getting these big time recruits. They're all going up to Oregon. They're all going to these other schools. You know, they got a quarterback, a 5-star guy who's right there in their backyard.
They lost two of them. They lost not only DJ Uiagalelei, but the kid from Mater Dei decommitted from them too.
Yeah.
What's his name, Bryce Young?
I believe so.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have two big-time quarterbacks not going to your school.
Right.
Right. Usually when you look at modern day and these big-time powerhouses, it's almost like a funnel. These guys, they build themselves up, become these nationally ranked quarterbacks. They lead modern day to a state championship, and they go to USC and play football. We're not seeing that case anymore. And I think if you can get a guy that can get that back, then, yeah, you definitely make that hire.
Unfortunately for Clay, whom I really like, the ceiling is the roof.
Another sports
second Michael Jordan. Second Michael Jordan reference in 2 weeks.
I think he's going to be a head coach somewhere, though. If not next year, then the year after. And I think it might be it could be Conference USA, Sun Belt, AAC.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there. And I think he will do very well. I just think that, you know, at USC, you need someone who can, like you said, can bring you national championships.
Yeah.
And maybe Urban Meyer's that guy. I don't know. Maybe James Franklin is that guy. Someone I think they might target if Urban isn't in the cards. I think he's got the personality for LA. And he also, if I'm him, like, you know what? If I'm at Penn State, I constantly have to go up against Ohio State. Constantly have to go up against Michigan. You don't have those obstacles.
Yeah.
Because USC is the Ohio State, or should be, anyway, of the Pac-12.
I mean, now, you know, Mario Cristobal, not only is he winning football games right now, but he's also recruiting well.
But they're in the other division.
That's true.
If you're Penn State, you're in the same division as Ohio State.
That's a good point. USC. That's a good point. I just think, you know, USC, they're that school that's always keeping up with the Joneses, and they're trying to make sure that they're still one of the big names in the Pac-12. And, you know, you got Oregon, who's – I know they're in a different division, but – I mean, they're in the conversation of the college football playoff. Utah is in the conversation for the college football playoff right now. I don't know. I just think USC, like you said, Lev, the ceiling is the roof right now. And I don't know. I'm not sure if Clay Helton is safe, but my goodness, if they win, you said there's a possibility they can win 8 games this year?
Well, yeah, they're 7-4. They have one game left. Yeah, against UCLA. And all they need is to tie Utah because they beat them head-to-head. They're Utah 6-1. In the conference, and USC 6-2. The problem is, you know, Utah's heavily favored against Arizona, and they're going to be heavily favored against Colorado, which are pretty much the consensus two worst teams in the league right now.
Yeah.
So it's unlikely that Utah's going to stumble.
Yeah.
But it's not impossible for that scenario to play out for USC, where, weirdly enough, like, they're Pac-12 champs and they're firing their coach.
It's insane. All right, we'll talk more Arizona and Pac-12 football later on throughout the week. Alec and I will also have a basketball podcast available this week as well. Make sure you subscribe to the Wildcast podcast on Apple Podcasts, and also download the Wildcaster app. It's free. It's available on the App Store or Google Play. And, it's always good when it's free. So for Lev, for Alec, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.
We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell, or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.